That's our new intro theme song. Welcome to Off the Cut, episode 110 for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. And again, we want to continue to remind you that the worst podcast available on Apple and Spotify is the Green Sitters Podcast. But the best place to buy woodworking tools is KM Tools. Right, Zach?
Oh, that is right, Eric. You know what they say? If it's in their shop, it's in their shop. And I'm going to keep on saying that until Jonathan threatens to take away the sponsorship from us.
That's fine. That's fine. You know, I was wearing one of his t-shirts the other day at the gym. Mm-hmm. And I looked in the mirror and I was like, did he make a typo on the shirt? Because it said... Oh, no. The shirt says for woodworkers by woodworkers or something. But in my head, I was like... Wait, isn't it? If it's in their shop, it's in their shop. And I was like, no, like, that's Zach's slogan. But, no, we're going to get t-shirts that say that or something.
Oh, we should. We should get some. That'd be a good April Fool's Day prank. Or, well, we won't see him that close to April Fool's, but we'll just get him like a Cat's Moses t-shirt that says, if it's in our shop, it's in our shop.
Yeah, that's good.
I think he'll enjoy that. But when I say... If it's in their shop, it's in their shop. I say that because 100% of the tools on the KM Tools website are either designed by Jonathan and his team, or they are tools that they literally use in their workshops. They're very selective, and they only have high-quality stuff there.
Yeah, not a bunch of hot garbage. You know, exactly. You're actually going to get something nice. And the other nice thing is that a portion of all of their sales go directly towards the Cats Moses Woodworkers with Disabilities Fund, which gets the tools and resources into the hands of folks who need it most. And
on top of that,
yes, this is the best part.
KM Tools also gives back to our podcast listeners with a $50 gift card every single month. And all you have to do to enter, well, you have to become a patron, and then you're automatically entered. You don't even have to do anything. Right. You literally just become a patron, and you're automatically entered to win the monthly drawing. And it's a little fun thing that we get to do to give back to our listeners. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of beautiful, Miranda just walked in. Hi, Miranda.
That's right. Hello. Can we give a plug for KM Tools from Miranda?
Yeah. Hi. No, she doesn't want to give a KM Tools plug. That was smooth, though, wasn't that?
I know. That's fair. Very nice.
I got to get those points in while I can.
That's right.
But you know what KM Tools doesn't have?
What's that?
New patrons.
Ooh, but we do.
But we do. You like that?
That was nice, transition? Yeah. Great transition. I mean, you kind of ruined a little bit by asking for compliments on it right away. But, you know, that's okay.
Sorry. I'll get better. So, do you remember last week... Well, maybe 2 weeks ago, we had a very lengthy discussion about dentistry.
Yes. Yes.
And then we had a follow up from one of my patrons, Matt Paulson, which is now going to be our resident dental expert.
Oh, I got so many questions from Matt.
I know. Matt signed up for the entire year as a patron of the podcast, too.
Wow. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt.
That's great.
That's always wild to me. It's very, like, first of all, it's incredibly humbling when someone signs up for Patreon. But then having them sign up for both of your Patreon accounts, like, that's crazy.
That's, yeah. That's a very, very generous person Matt is.
Right.
Yeah. I'm a little self-conscious about my teeth now.
Oh, nobody has worse teeth than I do, so don't worry.
Hey, everybody's going to be doing the podcast with their mouth cover.
Actually, you know what? That was one of the things that I was the most self-conscious about when I first started doing YouTube. That. Yeah, was you know, you don't notice these things about yourself until you start reviewing hours and hours of footage of yourself, and you're like, oh, I got this weird vocal tic, or oh, I got a kind of weird gap in my teeth that I've never noticed before. Yeah.
Or like, are there things that you're well aware of? Like, I know that I have a very wide gamut of dramatic vocal inflections where my voice gets really, really low and then it'll also get really high. Like, and I'm sure you guys, like right there,
oh, totally.
I'm sure 100%. You guys are very aware of that happens. And it's not something I do intentionally, but like when I first started YouTube, I knew about it. and I would just get obliterated by people in the comments about it. But I was aware of it, and like it doesn't bother me. So I was like,
it's just a thing you do. Yeah. That's why I could never do the voiceovers in one take.
No.
Because I hear weird things, and I'm like, no, I gotta re-record this and say it properly.
You ever thought about being a voice actor and reading audiobooks?
Hell no. That sounds like literal pain to me. I can't even voice over a YouTube video in a single setting. I had to break it up into like 3 or 4 chunks. Uh-oh, did we lose Eric? Oh, no, he's back.
No, am I back? Sorry, I got bored. I left.
Your video froze too at the same time. So.
How many pages at a time do you think those like audiobook recorders guys actually record? Like they're not reading for 5 minutes and calling it a day. They've got to be recording for at least an hour at a time.
I think they sit down and crank it out. And I think they do it in a studio too. So it's not like you can just do an hour and then break for lunch and come back. Like there's got to be an engineer. There's got to be a producer. There's probably, you know, I don't know, supervisor. This is probably a big operation that's got a lot of people. Yeah. It's not like us YouTubers.
Union?
Yeah. We're recording in our basements or whatever.
It's probably the... Never mind. I was going to say, what's the film... I was like, there's the Film Actors Guild. And I was like, I was like, what would be the voice version of that? And I was like, never mind.
Nope.
I'll let people read between the lines on that one.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's also the Screen Actors Guild for exactly that reason. These are Film Actors Guild.
The Film Actors Guild was from that Team America puppet movie, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Wow. Well, this podcast is going great so far. We're only 5 minutes in. Hey, we haven't gotten canceled yet. 110 episodes in. Speaking of not getting canceled, we've got our returning top tier patrons that come back every single week to make sure that, well, I don't know if they make sure we don't get canceled, but make sure that we don't cancel the show and make possible. We've got our returning top tier patrons. We've got Joe Welsh, Delaware at Delaware Valley Workshop, Goblin Spanker, Dan Armendariz, Corey Duvall, Dadu, and Josh at Sawdust Builds. By the way, Josh, logo looks good, man.
Yeah, nice rebrand by Josh. Very cool.
It's killer.
Yeah, my cat's crying.
Does your cat have the thing where if a door's closed, she'll just paw at it to be let in, and then you let her in, and she like comes in, does looks around the room, and then walks out?
Yes. Well, it's because Miranda was in here as she was grabbing probably some wedding stuff and then heading to a friend's house. It's always wine night during the podcast. So our cat Eleanor has like this attachment thing to her. So if she goes in the bathroom, she will endlessly bat at the door and just scream until she opens the door.
Yes.
Anytime.
Yes.
And if she walks out of the house, she will do the same thing. If I open the door, God, can you hear that?
No.
It's probably too far away. But she'll be like 3 or 4 feet away from the door, just staring at the door handle, endlessly crying. She'll cry for the next 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah, I don't go. Now when I go to the bathroom, I just leave the door open, like slightly ajar so that the cat can get in. She sits on, whenever I'm having a shower, she'll sit on the edge of the shower.
Yep.
And I'll, if I point one finger out and let water drip down it, she'll just sit there drinking it off the end of my finger.
Okay. Derek's probably like, what are these guys doing?
Why you know, the- you get a- I got cats, I know.
Yeah, you get a cat and you get weird with it.
Yeah. That's too funny. Those cats do funny things, but man, it's wild.
Yeah, so that's why they're such good pets, because they're always doing weird random stuff. You're like, okay, didn't know you could do that, but here we are.
Hey, I want to tell you guys, speaking about weird random things, I got a proposal from a from Graco. Have you heard of Graco before?
I always say Graco, but is it Graco?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I thought it was Graco.
Okay.
I don't know. But anyway, you're familiar. They're paint sprayers and finish sprayers and stuff like that.
HVLP, right?
Right. So they reached out to me and they're like, hey, would you like to do a 10-second YouTube integration, which is basically just like, oh, you know, I'm finishing a project, you know, and to spray it with polyurethane, I'm going to be using, you know, this, and this.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's it.
Cool.
And then an Instagram reel for what I was very happy for, the, you know, the payment. I was like, oh, yeah, cool, sure.
Yeah.
So then I, you know, I messaged my agent back and I was like, oh, can you tell me what product it is? Because I was like, Jason Bent got. It's like called like the Ultra Quick Shot or something like that.
Also Jason Bent's nickname in high school.
Right. And no, that's what he said. So it runs off of like a DeWalt battery, and then you basically like hold this like mini suitcase, and then you just have like a very free light gun. Like, I was like, that looks sweet. I would love to.
Yeah, that's cool. I have
the kicker.
I have their HVLP sprayer that uses a DeWalt battery, but it's like, it's all one unit. So it's kind of heavy and clunky. That looks cool. Right.
So here's the kicker, Zach. I was like, yeah, if it's that ultimate quick shot thing or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah.
Cause it's like a $1,500 like sprayer. It's not cheap.
Yeah. Greco stuff. Greco.
Whatever.
Generally, not kind paying of, for this. It's Gecko. Not cheap stuff. It's yeah.
So then I was going back and forth with Mark, and he was like, you know, forgive me, I'm not up to date on my spraying technology, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask them basically what sprayer it is. Because if everybody listening knows that you can get a $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 spray system that is dramatically different than like a $30, $40 sprayer that you pick up, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's basically somebody putting paint in their mouth and spitting it versus like, you know, getting it really smooth and even. So he came back and the one, I got to get the correct words. There's the explicit.
Oh, the explicit.
Oh, yep. It's called Greco 360 Connect. Yes. Okay. Greco 360 Cordless Connect. I thought this was an April Fool's joke when I saw it. It is a legitimate product. So let me know when you get it, when you're able to see it.
No, no way.
That was literally the exact reaction that I had. I had to check my calendar to see if it was April Fool's. So this for everyone at home. It looks like something you'd see on Temu.
This looks, that's what I was going to say. It looks like one of Brad Rodriguez's. Yes. Remember he did like those like ridiculous drill attachments that you can get on Temu video?
Yeah, that's exactly
what this looks like.
Oh, you attach a drill to this?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
So you guys are just as equivalently baffled as I am. So for everyone at home, if you're, first of all, look up, do yourself a favor, Greco True Coat 360 Cordless Connect.
And if nothing comes up when you search that, try searching Greco 360 Cordless Connect.
Yeah, either one of them. So anyway, starting from the tip, you have, this podcast is off the rails already. Starting from the tip, you have a normal sprayer.
Mm-hmm.
Looks fine. Yep. Back up a little bit. It looks like almost the same sprayer that you have the battery platform, the DeWalt one.
Yeah.
It has the can on the bottom. It twists in. It has some settings. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, you know, it's an entry to medium level sprayer.
Yep.
Doesn't look too bad. Then you're like, There's no motor on this thing. There's no handle.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it gets different. It has this like metal protruding axle that comes out the back. And then what I can only describe as a plastic kickstand jetting out the bottom of it.
Yeah.
What you are to do is chuck up your drill on the back of this thing, attach the kickstand and some sort of seat belt around the battery platform of the drill, and just use the trigger of your drill to drive the fan inside the spring.
On one hand, like, I'm kind of impressed by it because clearly there's been some engineering work that's gone into this thing. But then on the other hand, I'm looking at it, I'm like, this looks like something that I would come up with in an afternoon 3D printing. Like the arm that projects off the back and goes to the bottom of the drill's battery, and then it's just a Velcro strap that goes over the top.
It's like a science fair project.
Yeah, exactly.
But devil's advocate, what if it turns out to be halfway decent? Is it possible? Could it be decent?
I'm looking on Home Depot's website right now. 3 5-star reviews. Now, did they pay for those reviews? Potentially.
Does it say if it's part of like the Home Depot Connect program or whatever the hell they call it?
It says, two of them say customer review from magnum.graco.com. Graco.com. Uh-huh. I can't stop saying Graco. I'm sorry.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I sent Mark a message back and I said, we already got the explicit. I said, wow, that is some wacky shit. I will respectfully pass if that's the sprayer they want featured. And he goes, noted. I don't speak this language, so can you give me a bit of insight into what makes this so wacky? And I said, it's being entirely run through a drill. It's likely going to be super flimsy and finicky. Add the length and weight of the drill, and it's going to be cumbersome and challenging to use.
Yeah. Let's speculate about how this thing works. Do you think that the drill spins like a fan or a turbine in it?
That's what I'm thinking too.
But then you're going to have different volumes of paint being sprayed depending on the speed of your drill.
Right.
So isn't that like, I think
what that little like nozzle thing on the side does, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was wondering if maybe the drill was powering a very small compressor in the, and then it was using the air from that to project the paint. Because then you could like eliminate the variable, the speed of the drill potentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Whenever you go to their website, it suggests a drill driver for slow speeds and control, or an impact driver for large projects and faster pace.
Wow.
So if you just want to throw that paint out there, you put an impact driver on it.
Throw it on an impact driver? That feels wrong. Yeah.
Dear God. So I was like, I respectfully declined that. And he goes, what if I can get them to give you a different sprayer? Then I said, sure.
That's what I would have said. Right. Try and negotiate a different sprayer.
You know what I did just realize is he said, well, what about if you just do Instagram? And I said, I could test it out on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
And then he said, they said that they might give you the quick shot in addition to the cordless Connect.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I would maybe even say I gotta try it first. Yeah. I've done this with brands when I've never used their product before. I'll be like, okay, you gotta send it out to me. Let me test it before I'm willing to sign any contract or agree to anything.
Yeah.
And I've found usually brands are pretty receptive to that. But
yeah. And it was in the stage of just kind of kicking around the idea.
Yeah.
We're not in any like negotiation or anything like that. I thought that this was a wild invention that you guys have to look at.
Yes. Like, yes. Yeah. Very. I'm curious, you know, on the off chance that it is actually kind of good, maybe it's a decent product for the person who doesn't spray that often.
You know, watching the video of it just here on their website and watching it lay down paint, it's not consistent. It's coming out in spurts as it goes.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I would expect from something powered by a drill. So
But it's also under their DIY category. So for somebody that's just trying to rip some paint on like some outdoor furniture, that they're not looking for like a professional level finish, like is what
you know what I got recently that's pretty good is like it's halfway between an HVLP sprayer and a airbrush. It's kind of like a really big airbrush. Probably holds about like I can only do it in milliliters, like 250 milliliters of paint, so like a quarter of a quart.
Yeah, so that's like a pop can, like 12 ounce beer can, a little less.
Yeah, a little bit less than that. And it's been great for spraying like polyurethane finishes and stuff, water based stuff. Huh. And just hook it up to a compressor and go. I don't know. Do you have a compressor in your shop?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. That's one of the things I've actually debated on. Getting an air compressor versus just having battery-powered nailers and stuff.
Yeah. The compressors, if you can get away without having one, it's nice. But there are some air tools that are legitimately just better with, like, a compressor. Like, even the nailers I could go either way on. The air-powered stuff is always way cheaper, and it generally performs better than the battery stuff. Right. But is it worth having a compressor there? It's like you can definitely survive with a 18-gauge cordless nailer, 16-gauge cordless nailer. Right. But some of the painting stuff I've realized is a lot better with a compressor. Like I have that Graco gun that takes a wall battery. I never use it because the cleanup is such a pain in the ass with it. Whereas this like mini airbrush thing, it's like it's so simple. I just when I'm done spraying, I hold it under the tap until the water runs clear, and then I throw it on the shelf. And it's good to go for next time.
See what I do with my sprayer, and I just have some like $80 one. It's basically if I'm just like throwing some poly on some shop furniture, right? Mm-hmm. It's not great, but I only put water-based poly in there. Yeah. And then once I'm done, I basically fill the can up with water, shake the daylights out of it, spray it a whole bunch, do that once or twice, and then I'm like, that's good.
But you usually have, like, water on the outside of it, or not water, but like, poly gets, like, around the tip, and it's, like, sometimes it sprays back on it, and you can't just take the machine and put it underneath the tap to clean it out, right? So.
Oh, I see what you're saying. With that.
Like, I literally just take the whole thing, put it in the sink, run water over it, and it comes out spotless, and it's good to go.
That's true. Yeah, I don't know. The air compressor is loud, too, and you have to do maintenance on them that no one ever does.
You just run them into the ground.
Like, what's the last time you drained and cleaned your air compressor?
I don't know. I
probably actually, never. You know what? Dad do it?
No. I used to be really diligent about it on job sites. Like at the end of the day, after installing a bunch of trim or something like that, I would take it out back, let the air out, let all the water drain out of it. I do it daily. But the one in the shop, I can't even remember the last time I did it. So
isn't that funny?
Yeah. I just actually installed, yesterday, a brand new compressor in the shop.
Ooh, what'd you go with?
Yeah. DeWalt, or Stanley Black & Decker wanted me to do some voiceover work for a video that I did for them last year about this time. And they're like, hey, we've got like a small budget set aside to pay you to do this voiceover stuff. I was like, you know what? I actually need some tools. So keep your money and give me a compressor. Huh? And they're like, oh, yeah, we can do that. No problem. So they sent over their big, like, what is it? I think it's like a 13-gallon compressor.
That's pretty good sized.
Yeah, and so what I did was I used to have a floor one that was quite small, and I would just keep it, like, you know, underneath one of my workbenches and plug tools into it. But what I did is I took this big one, I put it in a corner of the shop, and then I ran hose up along the ceiling, and then there's a drop with, like, a hose on a reel.
Yeah, a little, like, spring-loaded reel thingy that goes... winds it all
up. Exactly. So I have two already for extension cords, so now I have a third one in the middle that's just a compressor hose.
Compressor hose, is it pretty cheap? Like you said, you want to run it across the shop.
Yeah. What did I get? I got like 50 feet for $60 or something like that.
Oh, okay, sure. It's fine.
The real thing was like another 150 or something like that. So not the cheapest thing in the world, but not horrible either. And Beats, the thing that would always get me about the one, I used to have the one under the bench and like 50 feet of hose attached to it.
Right, right.
Coiling up that hose so that it sits perfectly at the end of the day was a nightmare. So I'm really excited to have this reel. Just as soon as I'm done with it, just give a little tug and it goes back up. Never have to worry about it.
You think they make that for shop vac hoses?
I don't know. I don't know. I think the hose is so bulky, but let's see.
You know, like shop the Festool hose, if you can get like a a reel. That'd be nice.
Shop vac hose reel. I have one of them for my garden hose and I love it.
They do make them. I've seen it.
Oh, they do.
Are they like a manual crank?
Rockler makes one.
Huh. Yeah. Oh, look at this one even has like a dust port that comes out the side. Yeah, it looks like a manual crank.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I might do that. I do hate tripping over the hose all the time. It's really only Rockler who makes it, I think.
Yeah. See, what I always do is I always just coil up my hose real quick and I throw it on top of the shop.
This one's automatic.
How much is this one, Derek?
$320.
$320 from Giraffe Tools.
Yeah.
Huh.
Automatic though.
Yeah. Hey, who am I kidding? I'm never gonna upgrade to anything like that.
Here's one made out of plywood. You probably just get the CNC files and make it yourself.
Yeah.
There you go.
Man, this the retractable hose reel, 50 feet, $2,800.
Whoa!
Who's that?
This the company is McCarty Vacuums. It looks like this is for professional mechanic space or something like that.
Somebody who's cleaning carpets or something like that.
Yeah, that's insane.
Somebody has got like
I'd do the manual retraction one.
Yeah, honestly, the Rockler one doesn't look too bad. How much is the Rockler one?
But who's running that long a hose from their shop vac?
Well, if you're in a garage and you don't want to like be dragging it all over you want somewhere to store it up pretty nice.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm always vacuuming up the shop and then not putting the hose away properly, so. Yeah, but the thing is, I bet this system doesn't work with the Festool. Oh, no, it's Bluetooth, isn't it? The Festool thingy?
Yeah. You click the end of it.
Yeah. It's Bluetooth, so range doesn't matter. I was thinking that there was like a wire in the hose, so.
No.
Yeah, no. Okay.
It's right. $160 for the reel on Rockler alone, not the hose.
No hose.
The hose is separate.
What if you just get a garden reel hose thing? Garden hose reel.
Yeah, you probably could.
I don't think your connection would work because that uses the garden hose connects on the side.
I wasn't even thinking about like connecting it. I'm just talking about like having something that like kind of wraps it all up. But I guess you have to have that moving part, right? Or else you're just it's just going to spin. You need like a free spinning like bearing mechanism on that for that to work.
Scott just did a video on dust collection, so I'm sure he could tell us why a reel like this is probably going to kill all of your suction.
I haven't watched it yet, but I saw it pop up. It looks like it's doing well.
Yeah. It's good. It's a good video.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Videos go well.
Suman like had like a little jokey comment in the comment section, and some guy responded to it. And he was like, "You should focus on making your own videos instead of harassing Scott."
It's like, as a matter of fact, I do have my own channel. But that is so true. Funny. Typically, the people who are leaving comments don't even have any videos on their themselves.
Oh, totally.
That's what it is.
Actually, Scott also screenshotted a comment he got recently. He sent it to me. He was like, "I think somebody has us mixed up." And I was like, "Oh, that's funny. What's it going to be?" And then it was somebody had commented on one of his latest videos. He's like, "You should do a modernized GameCube for your next video." And I was like, "Oh, that person did legitimately mix us up, I think."
Oh, that's too funny. You just reply wrong channel, man.
Yeah.
You know,
I think he sent it to me and then I found the post and I commented like, "Oh, that was a great idea. Scott, you should definitely do that."
I'm stealing that one.
Yeah, I was totally stealing that idea. Oh, That's too funny. Well, how's that? How's the server build going?
Good. You know, I've I just got a sponsorship. It's actually a two-part sponsorship, and they want a video on a pretty tight deadline. So I've actually sidelined the server for and I'm going to do another video instead because I think I can crank it out a little faster.
Doing a GameCube?
Not a GameCube, but close. Close, my friend. I'm doing a modern Game Boy.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, yeah, so it's, I've replaced the screen. I'm making a brand new case for it. But much smaller. You know, like this thing I can print about an hour or so, whereas every piece for the server takes a good, it takes a good like 20 hours to print. So.
So is that one going to be smaller than that analog one they came out with, or thinner than that analog one that came out? That's a
good question. So it's funny. I'm actually going to make it two ways. One way is going to be, you can just buy a Game Boy, take all the parts out of the stock one, and then put it in this new shell that I'm building. So I'll sell that as like a 3D printable product. The other one is I'm going to get a bunch of upgraded parts, and then with the upgraded parts, I should be able to make it considerably smaller, because I'll be able to like move some components around on the board and stuff like that and make it thinner. So I think the final form, like the ultimate one, will be smaller than that analog pocket thing. But maybe the one where you just take the parts out of your existing Game Boy and rehouse them, maybe it won't be. It'll be close though.
Yeah. There's the new, I'm sorry, what's the newest Game Boy?
Well, there's this product called, what's it, help me out, Analog Pocket, is that
what Analog Pocket, I think is what it's called, yeah. It's a separate company that makes them.
Yeah, it's like inspired by a Game Boy.
Oh, I see it. Analogio.
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking at the picture of it. Mine will be pretty close to the same size as the Analog Pocket. But the Analog Pocket will be more powerful because I'm using actual Game Boy hardware.
Yeah. And theirs you can run, like, what, up to PlayStation 1 games or something like that?
Just go that high? It may very well. It may very well.
That's wild.
Huh. Yeah.
The Game Boy was my go-to entertainment in the car and at church as a very young child.
Yes, that's what I'm going to lean on. I'm going to say, like, you know, I had a special place in the heart for my Game Boy because it's the only thing that separated me from sheer and utter boredom on every road trip as a kid.
And you have to listen to those, like,
I drove, well, I didn't drive because I was like 8 or 9, but my parents drove from Toronto to Florida. Two-day,
like a 20-hour drive.
Wow. A 20-hour drive, something like that. And before I left, my friend lent me his Game Boy.
What a saint.
Dude, you are a lifesaver right now. And that was my introduction. That road trip was my introduction to the Game Boy. I had this like shitty baseball game for it and the original Mario.
Oh, that'll keep you going.
Yeah, exactly.
The Pokemon was probably my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Pokemon was great, too.
There was the whole Pokemon ecosystem, though, on Game Boy didn't make sense. That, like, you could only get all of the Pokemon if you had all the different versions of the game. But the different versions of the game were not marketably different from one another.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I strategized with a couple of my buddies. I was like, you get the red version, I'll get the blue version, and then we can trade back and forth.
The
little
cable thingy. But then if you got Pokemon from your buddies that you would like send over the cable, then they like wouldn't follow you because like you weren't their parent or something like that.
I don't remember that.
Oh yeah, there's always finicky wild stuff, man.
And I remember that cable being like a bridge too far for my parents. I was like, I need this $30 cable so I can trade Pokemon with my friends, and they're like, no. We just bought you this $60 Pokemon game and that's enough.
Remember like the wilds? Like I feel like that was one of the games, at least that I was aware of, that became one of those things where you really dove into like the community base. And what I mean by that is people are like, oh, this is where this certain Pokemon is. Like if you do all this crazy stuff, You can get this Pokemon that's just a straight black square that was like random letters and stuff like that.
Level, I remember,
like a million or something.
I still remember how to do that too. There's like a little island that you go to and you like went up and down at the island and it would just randomly appear sometimes.
But didn't it like corrupt your game or something?
Yeah, it did. I think it screwed up your game, so you shouldn't do it all the time or something.
Yeah. But it was a way that you could get like unlimited like power-ups or something wild like that, but
yeah, not only did you get the crazy level Pokemon, but I think like the 10th item in your inventory slot will be multiplied by 100 or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
This has got to be fun doing all these retro console things. I'm sure it brings back tons of memories of like, oh, I remember this game.
Exactly. Yeah. Huh. I'm also thinking, this is such a weird thought, and I've floated this to a couple friends, but I'm thinking about starting to collect like ultra rare game consoles.
Mm.
Because some of them have like actual collector value. Like some of these things, you watch them go up. Like, do you remember being a kid and they talked about the Nintendo 64 disk drive?
Yeah.
And it was like this thing that was like in Japan, but it never really came out in the US. Well, you can actually buy those and they're like somewhere between, I don't know, $500 and $1,000. But they've like tripled in value over the last, I don't know, 5 years, let's say.
Interesting.
So it's one of those things where it's like, oh, that could be like a fun thing. That's like, I don't know. It's like a weird little investment, but also just like a weird piece of nostalgia at the same time.
I get that.
Yeah. I've never really collected anything before. Like, you know how people have like baseball cards and stuff like that? I've never done that before, so.
Yeah, I've never been much of a collector of things. Yeah. I personally find clutter in it, but it's also probably because we live in an apartment and like having any modicum of storage space is a massive premium.
Yeah, definitely.
It'll be like, I don't know if we can keep these cups. We already have enough cups. We're going to throw these out.
I do love throwing stuff out.
Oh,
it's a great feeling. You go into a drawer, you're like, I haven't used this in a year. Garbage. I haven't used this. Garbage.
It's freeing. Man, your clothes, too.
Oh, like, totally.
Like, we could go on forever.
Yeah.
So you're working on the Game Boy. What are you going to call this one? The modern Game Boy?
Yeah, modern Game Boy. Something like that. Ultimate Game Boys. Not very creative, but.
Play the Game Boy cartridges, or is it going to be like an SD card like all the other ones?
Well, so it will play the original cartridges, and it'll. I also got this cartridge, I think somewhere around my room, but it's like a cartridge. You plug an SD card into it, and then you can play all the games from that.
Okay. Yeah.
But it will still have the original
Zach Boy.
Yeah, it will still have support for the original ones as well.
You should start the video off by getting a Game Boy and smashing it and be like, stop using this. Like, get people so mad.
Well, yeah, I don't think I would do that. That would make me mad, I think.
I know.
Just 3D print one that looks close.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. Or maybe I could get like an already broken one.
One that's just like basically just parts or whatever like that.
Yeah.
But film it in a way that like it looks good and then smash it and then like basically like flip it over, you know, like the back looks good but the front's already destroyed.
Yeah.
And then be like, this is what you should do.
You do like those old YouTube videos and smash it open and pull your new one out of it like it was in there the whole
time. Oh, interesting.
It's like a
phoenix. Did actually order. So this is the project I'm using a Game Boy Advanced for all the hardware. But I actually ordered like an original 1980s Game Boy to use as like a prop in the video.
Oh, the big chunky,
you know, boy.
The big
what would be smaller?
One, yeah.
Have you ever seen the Game Boy Micro?
I have. Yeah, I did think about using that, but I don't like the horizontal form factor. I like the vertical form factor better.
Micro.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could swap out the. I don't know if you could swap out the screens on that or not, or if it would still come out horizontally though.
I think the PCB on the inside is like one big. It's like one solid monolithic thing. So unless you could cut the PCB, I guess maybe that's a little bit of modding. that's too advanced for me.
Yeah. But Zach's got to hammer this video out in a short period of time to get money. Leave him alone there.
No, but it's fun, like, designing something that's this small. It's like there's all sorts of challenges. Like, your tolerances have to be so tight. So that part of it has actually been really enjoyable, too. Like, I'm learning a lot about... Well, you should see the Fusion model for this thing. It's pretty crazy. I bet it's
wild.
Yeah.
Probably have, like, a whole timeline of things on the bottom of the screen you got to cycle through. And
dude, I tried to do... For this video, I tried to use Fusion properly, like where it's like you just have very few sketches, and rather than like, you know how you can like you can make a shape and then you can layer on your changes on top of that shape, or you can go back and edit the original sketch.
Yes.
So and that's how you should do it. You should always work as much from the beginning as you possibly can. And I tried to do this one properly for like the first like 3 or 4 days that I was working on it. But at a certain point, I was like, screw this. And I just started layering on sketches on top of stuff.
It gives me anxiety, man. I don't even want to see this model. I try to like do it so textbook.
Yeah. I'm
like, okay, I want to change something. I know there are like 4 sketches and a couple extrude commands and that's it.
Yeah, so you can like you can see the point in the Fusion file where I actually gave up because I was labeling all the sketches. I was like, okay, this is the lowercase sketch. This is the uppercase sketch.
You don't label your sketches?
And then at sketch 10, it's just sketch 10, sketch 11, sketch 12, and then all the way up to sketch 38.
Oh, my
God. If I don't plan on using it more than once or twice, I don't go that detailed on it either. I'm just going to hammer it out.
Yeah.
You're crazy. Yeah. That's... Dude, you guys are something. I've been working on tech stuff. And
yeah.
So I told you we're doing those like wine box.
Actually, yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I got them there?
Here's one. So it's not done. It's like a simple box, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Got the... like the finger joints on the side looks really good. Came out real clean.
Yeah, definitely.
So Miranda's like, I wanna carve some, you know, some stuff on the top or the side or whatever. And I was like, yeah, great. So you had told me about that AI thing, Vectorize or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So we've got this like real intricate thing that she drew up on Canva. Right, which is like basically poor people's Photoshop.
Girls love Canva. Sophie loves Canva.
Yeah.
It's simple, easy to use. Yeah.
Right.
It's surprisingly powerful if you get right into it. Yeah. But yeah.
And so she drew up this whole thing, and I was like, great. I'll just put her into this vectorized thing. Here's the problem. Is like here's a rough idea of like it's got all these flowers and all kinds of stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And so I put it in on the vectorized thing. I think when it's making the vector of it, it's making so many damn like sketch points that I put it into the shaper origin and it like crashes the shaper origin.
Should I simplify your sketch?
Yeah, see if that vectorized website lets you pick a resolution or like a number of points. I often use
or you Adobe can drop it into Illustrator. Yeah. Illustrator will let you simplify it.
That's what I'm thinking. I think I just need to just pwn up the money and just pay for Illustrator.
Yeah.
Like I'm not going to really use it that much.
Do you you're cheap ass. You pay for like the photography Adobe suite, right? Yeah, it's like
$9 a month or something.
Right. Yeah, you got to pony up and pay $35 a month and get the unlimited one.
So you said there should be some setting on here that's like a number. See, I don't see anything like.
Hold on. Let me drag an image in and see.
Yeah. I don't see anything that does. Like basically makes it less dense because then when I uploaded that file into the shaper thing, it was like, oh, you have like 900 and something shapes.
Right.
So I think I'm just like completely overworking the shaper origin.
And I'm surprised it was
unbelievably laggy.
can't handle that much.
What if you broke out the text separate from the image and just did it in two different passes?
Ooh, two passes. I like that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't think the text was the issue. I think it was like, so like these like flower things here. See, they're like really like detailed like leaves and stuff like that. Yeah. I think it's trying to do each one of those as a separate thing. When ideally I would just love for that entire shape to just be effectively like one line that it, the shaper's going about.
Right. You know, okay, so I just ran something through Vectorize. And right before you hit download, there's an option to change the resolution and a whole bunch of various, you know, options. And you might even try not saving it. I don't know what the Shaper Origin will actually take in terms of input files, but you could try saving it as a DXF or PDF or something. Oh, it won't do. Okay, it'll just do SVG.
Yeah.
So there's also different SVG versions. There's SVG Tiny 1.2 that might fix it. You can also, I think, yeah, you can do fill shapes or you can do stroke shape outlines.
Ayo.
There's also like line fit tolerance. You could try changing that to coarse. There's a couple of things you could play with and you might be able to get a little bit better because that isn't that complex of a shape.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's something I need to do. I mean, it's just frustrating. I'm like, or do I just get Adobe Illustrator and just like, I'm sure, like Derek said, if I hit that simplify thing, because that's when I Googled it. That's even what Shaper recommends. They're like, oh, if you have a file that's making your shaper laggy, just Adobe Illustrator file simplify, and then like you're done.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, I mean, I'm sure that's what I need to do. It drives me nuts. Like this is, you have this illusion, like, oh, you get this thing, boom, boom, boom. You just press a button and it cuts it all. It's like, no, dude, there's a lot that goes into computer design of like using a CNC to do all this stuff. Like,
oh, totally. It's a skill set just like anything else, right?
Right. But I feel like my eyes have just been open to it now that I'm like really trying to go after this. But I think like it looks pretty neat. Like, there's some, you know, like she wants to like carve stuff on there and whatnot. And yeah, some of these paths are way too deep and whatnot. But I mean, fun doing it, huh?
Was that a lid or is that like one of the back panels?
No, this is just like there's these pieces are double sided tape to one another that I was just trying to like just it's a million like test carves of
gotcha.
The things need to be and stuff like that. But yeah, it's been a fun project and it's been kind of nice to like really dive into something and work on something and not at all worry about filming it. So like I can go through all these troubleshooting things and it's nice.
Yes. Yes.
But during the midst of that, the reason I went all in on that this weekend is because I was working on that Helix table, right? The one we've been talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to go like cut out the pieces, like those weird looking triangular pieces, and then I was going to glue them together. And I'm like, I think I'm missing a lot of lumber.
Uh-oh.
So I glued up one panel that's going to make up the top and the bottom. Right, like a rectangle, you just cut in half, and then you got top and bottom.
Yep.
And I made another rectangle that I was gonna get like the two triangular pieces out of. Right. The only problem is the middle of that table needs four of those triangular pieces.
I was gonna say, yeah.
That I didn't even think about. So, like, I even have like my rough plans here, where I have one is like a bigger thing with like I was like, oh, I'm gonna cut the triangle, and then another one is the top. So I just made these two panels and I'm like, I can't cut the interior supports yet. So I had to go through the process of milling all this other wood over the weekend, filling the holes with more epoxy and stuff. So I'm just like, you know what, I'm going all in on these wine boxes right now.
That's the best part about making a YouTube video though, is when you're making it, you just film making one leg, and that's all you need. You don't need to film making the other leg. You just be like, and then I got the other one, and it's done, and here you go, and you glue it all together.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
It's like, I'm stopping. So, yeah, I'm working on those wine boxes. It's fun to do some different things like carving stuff in the CNC. But now I totally get why, if you're doing the Shaper Origin is fantastic if you need to take the tool to a work pace. But if I were like making custom cutting boards and engraving them, this would be the worst tool to have. Use a CNC.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of CNCs, I've never had an issue with my X-Carve or anything like that rejecting a pattern for being too complex or being laggy because my work was too complex. So,
right.
Yeah.
I think the reason is because, like, as you take the shaper and then you kind of like go over and it's just like, oh, do you want to do that path now? And then I move it over like the teeniest amount. It's like, oh, do you want to do that path now?
Yeah, you're constantly giving it inputs. It doesn't know what path you're going to take. Whereas, you know, when you're CNCing something, it figures out the optimal route that it's going to take.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not relying on your physical inputs in order
Right.
That's interesting. So it's got to be a little bit more flexible in how it's programming the path.
Yeah, and I think this is also like a learning thing for me. It's like, again, with this flower design, there's supposed to be more flowers that are in this interior
thing. Like on the bottom?
Yeah, but all of these flowers were one half. Like, it knew to call all of those out at once, but didn't know any of the other flowers in the bottom, which doesn't make sense to me. It's like, it seems as all separate carving paths.
Interesting.
On Illustrator, if I can just basically highlight that entire flower and just say, hey, this is one shape, like if that work.
I wonder if that's a limitation of Vectorize, because maybe it's not expecting, it's using some AI formula to vectorize things. So it's not, it doesn't really care if it's just a bunch of shapes laid on top of each other versus one continuous line.
Yeah. I think what Vectorize is doing is it's trying to say, okay, this is a shape, this is a shape, this is a shape.
Yes.
And so like some of those individual leaves are separate shapes, but then some of them are a part of this broader shape. And then it's trying to be helpful by separating out those individual shapes. What's actually making it worse.
Yeah. Hey, so question for you. When you start carving with the, what's this thing called? The shaper?
Yeah.
Does it tell you, does it give you a suggestion? Like, hey, you know, go this way. This is like the optimal path to go. Or does it just kind of let you figure it out for yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of it will have to do with making sure you're not climb cutting. So like if you were doing like a, say you had like carving an end grain and you were making it like a 10 in, right?
Yeah.
It would know which way to go if you're not climb cutting.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So do you see a everyday use case for the Shaper Origin, or is it just kind of like a specialty, I'll use it every great once in a while tool, but, or do you see something that anybody could use it every day for?
So
good question.
That's a fantastic question. I view it more as I'm working on something and I need to like, now I need to do something special. Like, oh, I need to carve a logo into a dining room table. Yes. You're not going to do that on a CNC unless you have a huge CNC, right?
Yeah.
Or, oh man, I really need to make this like really intricate dado here. And it's like, well, I could set up jigs and like set up this whole like stop and start board. Like it would work well there. You could do like I did like the finger joints on here. They turned out perfect, but it took forever to do it.
And you use that that work holder thing they have, right?
Right. Yeah, like the little workstation thing.
Yeah.
I would say it's great for one-off things, but is a horrible production tool.
What about if your business was going around and carving people's address number into their front door or something like that?
It'd be phenomenal for
that. Yeah, that would be the greatest use case for it that I can possibly think of.
I think the way I think of it is, would you rather have a router or a router table? They're the same tool, but they function dramatically differently.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, there are some cases where you're like, oh, dude, cordless router all day, every day. And then there are other things where you're like, router table all day, mm-hmm. every day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I'm very happy with it so far for what I'm looking for. Like, especially small shops, like let's say I need to bang out a furniture template. Sure, it's going to take a little more time with the shaper, but then I can make it and then put it away. I don't have my shop burdened with this massive CNC.
Yeah, that's true. And I think if you were, what's the biggest thing you can carve with a shaper?
There's no limit.
There's no limit? So like some company came, they were like, hey,
just the complexity of your file.
Right.
I have like a 10-foot by 10-foot sign on the front of our building and we want to carve our logo into it. You could do that?
Yeah. Cool. I mean, you use a, just
as long as it doesn't have flowers on it.
As long as it's not too complex.
No. He'd be all right. But it's also, remember, like, I think my issue comes from I designed something in Canva, which is outputting like a really shitty quality PNG file. Then I'm using AI to try to transform it into a SVG. And it's like, hey, man, I'm doing the best I can
here. I keep telling myself I'm going to properly learn how to use Illustrator one day, and I still haven't done it. But that's is how you should be creating stuff like that.
Right. But it's so, like, I mean, this side where it's just like, you know, like the text or whatever had zero issue at all doing that.
Yeah. Shouldn't that be the Spence Lee's?
Yeah, this piece was too small.
Okay.
Because there's supposed to be another flower over on this side as well. But this is just like scrap that I was testing things out in.
Okay.
Yeah. But
the Spence Lee.
Yeah. So I'm not told the Spence. The
Spence Lee. Sounds like what Zach had in his nightstand.
Yeah. Hey, that was one time. No, I'm not totally shaming the Shaper Origin. I think it's giving it a poo-poo, you know, giving it poo-poo resources, and it's saying, hey man, I'm doing the best I can.
If the Shaper was half the price it is, I think it'd be a much more compelling product because it's $2,000, right? Give or take.
Yeah, around there, yeah.
Even and just 500 off.
That, yeah, like, but you're like really into entry level CNC at that point, and like pretty decent entry level CNC at that point. Like
$1,500, yeah.
Yeah, unless you're really space constrained, or you have one of those weird, you know, use cases where you're engraving logos in the front of people's houses or whatever.
Right.
It's I don't know. It's very niche. So I wonder how many of them they actually sell every year.
I don't know. It's one thing. I'm very happy I have it. I think it works great. Yeah. I would not go out of my way to be like, oh, you guys, you got to get this. You got to get this. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't turn one away, but I'm not going out of my way to get it either.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I wouldn't be like, Derek, you got to get this thing, man. Oh, if you're God, like, hey, I'm thinking about doing some CNC stuff. I don't want to have a full CNC in my shop, but like every once in a while, I would like to have.
Yeah.
Some computer manufacturing. They'd be like, I don't know. Check it out. See if it's see if it's for you.
Yeah. But. Real quick, because Derek, I know you're in the market for a 3D printer.
Oh.
Did you see Eric that your favorite company, Creality, just announced a new 3D printer?
Does it work?
Well, that remains to be seen because it's not out yet. But they took the biggest innovation from the Bamboo Lab, and basically copied it or knocked it off. So they're coming out with what they call the K2, and it's going to have a multi-material system where it can support multiple filaments at the same time.
I would not buy a Creality printer just on how of shitty experience I had with the one I have. But I know a lot of people love it.
I had a good experience with mine, so now I'm like, oh, I kind of want that K2 now. So, and they're making, I think they're making one.
How many 3D printers do you need, Zach?
All of them, Eric. I will never stop acquiring 3D printers until the day I die. This new one, too, I think does 350 by 350 by 350 millimeters, which is pretty damn big.
Millimeters.
Millimeters, yeah. What did I say?
Meters. Centimeters?
Meters. Oh, yeah. It's the world's biggest 3D printer. Yeah. Yeah, Derek showed it up on screen there. It looks like a pretty cool package, so I'm excited to see how it performs when it comes out. I'll see if I can get my hand on one.
You know what doesn't make sense? Is you have huge technological leaps in, like, you know, TVs, cell phones, cameras, 3D printers. But when it comes to woodworking tools, people are like, nah.
Use a drill.
Right. Like, no one innovates on tools.
I think there is...
Well, hey, we just talked about Graco innovating on the sprayer.
I don't know. If they send that to me, I will give you guys a full, unbiased review of that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to do, like, a YouTube video where you take, like, a drill and just be like, how can we make this thing better? And then actually, I think we did this in a podcast episode, like, really early on.
Make
and just talk
the drill a, like, hammer.
Yeah, a plate on the back of it so that you can use it like a hammer. Boom, 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 boom.
Who like, has a saw blade to it?
Yeah.
Or just like a little level on it that lets you know, like, is it, are you cocked? Are you like, you know, yeah, 5-degree angle and you don't realize it so that you always go in perfectly straight?
I actually had a Craftsman drill from Sears that was probably like $19 that I bought when I was in college. That had a bubble level on it.
Really? Yeah. So it exists. It's doable. Yeah. Huh.
Now, did it work? I couldn't tell you.
How often are you drilling straight down?
Right.
Yeah, but like you drill horizontal all the time. So, I mean, if you had like an accelerometer in it and a little LCD, you could output like the different angles depending on how you're holding the drill.
I don't know. Do you think that so you guys heard about the SawStop thing, right? That they released some sort of level of their patent.
They're gonna.
I did hear.
Yeah. Are they going to?
What was this?
Yeah, I think it's like they said that they would if I forget what it was. It was like something about like
the U.S. mandated that.
Yeah, if they make it a requirement, a safety requirement, they'll release the patent. Basically.
Huh.
Interesting.
But do you think it runs up anyways?
Do you think it'd make its way to like a drill though?
That's like the measuring the conductivity of the drill bit, and then
I've actually seen that. There's one that'll stop from jerking your wrist around. It'll actually stop. Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Oh, you do.
Yeah, that's the
Festool one, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, it is incredible. Like, you ever driving like a big spade bit or Forstner bit into something, and then it like
just catches
and like breaks your wrist. The drill moves like maybe 20 to 30 degrees and just goes and stops instantly. It's like an electronic clutch.
Yeah. Okay. And that's it's a new fantastic. Drill?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm going to buy a Festool drill because I've had my wrists jerked around like that multiple times and it sucks.
It hurts.
I have this big SDS drill. It takes 1-inch drill bits for drilling through concrete and stuff like that. And I had a hole saw on that once. Hole sawing through concrete and locked up on me. It literally just tore the tool out of my hand.
Yeah. Even with that like auxiliary handle that you hold at a 45 degree, like
if it catches, this thing is designed for drilling through concrete. Like, it's got a ton of torque.
Right.
Even if you got
the handle's just an extra paddle to smack you with.
Rack you right in the jimmies.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, speaking of racking you right in the jimmies, we probably ought to head over to the after show.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan to me.
So, everybody, if you want to, you know, sign up to get that $50 gift card from Cam Tools and unlock the after show and a myriad of other benefits keeping this show alive, head over to patreon.com/offthecutpodcast and we'll see you there with all the cool kids.
See you, everybody.
See you.